Hello everyone, this is David McGuffin, and welcome to my audio guided tour of the Roman Colosseum. This audio walking tour in and around the Colosseum is designed to be experienced in real time, that is, without pausing. However, depending on the crowds and the queues, you are welcome to take it at your own pace and pause to enjoy the experience. Okay, now let's get going. This massive arena is the first image that comes to mind when I think of Rome. It was constructed by the Emperor Vespasian, the first of several Flavian emperors. It was inaugurated in 80 AD as the first Flavian amphitheater. Before going inside the Colosseum, let's take a look at it from the outside. A good vantage point is on the north side near the Colosseum metro station. If you have time, try to find the steps about 50 feet to the right of the metro station leading up to the streets above the metro station. If you don't want to make the climb, then try to position yourself between the metro station and the north side of the Colosseum. Hey, listen, there will be crowds and pickpockets and students and locals asking you to join a guided tour, and a lot of tourists wandering around looking for the entrance. Try to ignore them if you can, and concentrate on the colossal structure in front of you. The Romans were always seeking ways to take a Greek idea and put a new Roman twist on it. The Flavian amphitheater is no exception. In essence, the Roman took the plan for a classical Greek theater, that's kind of like a half semicircle, and built two of them end to end, coming up with a design for a huge freestanding amphi, or two-sided theater. Emperor Nero, that's Vespasian's predecessor, had constructed a lavish palace just over the hill behind the metro station. The site where the Colosseum sits today was once a large man-made lake surrounded by porticos, balconies, and grand walkways. This palace complex, known as the Domus Aurea, or the Golden House, contained a colossal 100-foot bronze statue of the Emperor Nero. After the Flavian amphitheater was constructed, Vespasian had Nero's colossal statue placed out front of his new colossal amphitheater. The combination of this colossal statue of Nero and the colossal amphitheater seemed to stick, and the amphitheater took on the nickname as the Colosseum, or the Colosseum. Now, Nero's statue has long since perished, but it once stood over there to the right on the grassy area where the tall cypress trees are growing between the Colosseum and the wrought iron fence flanking the Forum area. Even compared to today's modern sports stadiums, this Colosseum was massive. Four stories reached 157 feet up into the sky. Its footprint covered 6 acres, and it's suggested that 50,000 to 80,000 Romans could sit comfortably and watch the games. The yellowish travertine stone you see today was painted bright white with multicolored trim adorning the arches and the columns. It was a grand sight to behold. Notice the foundations of the Colosseum are below the present-day ground level. After the fall of Rome, the Colosseum decayed. It was used as stables, housing projects, a dumping ground, and its many, many pieces of stone were carted off for new construction projects. The four levels are constructed in the same manner. On the ground floor, notice the same arch is repeated around the entire perimeter, forming a rigid ring to support the other stories. Many believe the Romans were the first to use the arch in construction, although the arch appeared in history much earlier than the Romans by the Etruscan civilization that lived before the Romans. Regardless, you can find the arch all over the Roman world. Craftsmen constructed an arch-shaped form made of wood, then lay pre-cut stones up the sides and around the top of the arch. At the very top, a triangular piece of stone called a keystone was wedged in place and the wooden form was removed. And the arch was stronger than a solid wall. As you can see, this process was repeated one story after the other all the way up the total 4 stories. The Romans were practical builders. They were not into frills and aesthetically pleasing facades. Function took precedence over beauty, hence the functional arches that held everything together. But do notice there was some ornamentation. See the columns on each level? They're not there to support anything. In fact, they are only half columns used to decorate and break up the monotony of the structure. On the ground level, the column tops, the capitals, are flat and rounded. Look up at the second level, the columns have rolled, scrolled capitals. On the third level, the capitals are leafy. Then, notice the fourth level uses a combination of all three styles. These capital styles were defined by the Greeks a century before the Romans. The plain flat ones are known as Doric columns. The scrolled one is named Ionic, and the leafy capital is called Corinthian. In each of the arches were placed statues of Roman gods and historical figures to add even more grandeur to the Colosseum's appearance. By the way, this was not the only amphitheater in the Roman world. There are more than 200 such amphitheaters scattered from the Middle East to the Atlantic, but the colossal amphitheater here in Rome was the biggest and the greatest of all. Finally, take a close look at the ground-level arches. There are several nearby that you may be able to see, and these arches served as entrances and exit doors. Over here on the north side, you may be able to make out Roman numerals etched above each doorway. The Romans had a clay entry ticket that defined their entry door, their section number, and seat number, just like we do in our modern stadiums today. Okay, let's head to the entrance. That's around the corner to the right on the west side of the Colosseum. It won't be hard to find this because that's where the people are all standing in the queues. Now make sure you get in the correct queue. There are lines for ticket buyers. There are those for prepaid ticket holders and pass holders, and a separate queue for groups. Choose the correct line. Now, because of the crowds, it may take a while, but your ultimate goal is to get out into the open arena where all the Roman action took place. Because of the crowds, it may take a while, but your ultimate goal is to get out into the open arena where all the Roman action took place. But before you get there, you have to pass through a security check, then the interior entry hallways, and finally through a ticket turnstile. If you do not have a pre-purchase ticket, you'll be diverted to another queue to buy a ticket on the spot. Here's a little more information while you shuffle through the queue. You are in the interior of the Colosseum on the ground floor. Look up and see all those potholes in the walls. The huge stones making up the arches we saw from the outside were originally held together with iron pegs buried into the stone. No mortar was used. The Colosseum became a relic after the fall of Rome, and its ready-cut stones were cannibalized for easy building materials in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. Later, when iron was at a shortage, the Colosseum's iron pegs were chiseled out to make weapons of war, as well as hinges, railings, and later, even bullets. Earlier, I mentioned the Colosseum opened in 80 AD. Construction began earlier in 72 AD. It was funded by the spoils of war from the first siege on Jerusalem during 70 AD. Emperor Vespasian carted loads of treasures and 60 to 100,000 Jewish slaves back to Rome. Those slaves, directed by Roman engineers, labored for 8 years to build the Colosseum. The Romans were known as great builders and pioneers of many construction techniques we still use today. We've talked about the arch, but they also invented concrete. Essentially, the Romans would construct a shell of brick and mortar and then pour concrete in the void, making for a super strong and sturdy structure. These concrete-filled shells were then covered with gleaming white travertine marble for a finishing touch of grandeur. Once inside the Colosseum, be sure to note the many examples of this brick-and-mortar shell filled with concrete construction method. By the way, you're standing in one of the many interior hallways of the Colosseum. Just like our stadiums today, the wide walkways, stairs, and ramps were designed to get people into and out of the amphitheater very quickly. The Latin term for these walkways is vomitorium, the word from which we get our English word vomit. Inside, lining the walkways, were a multitude of kiosks in which vendors would sell official team merchandise, bowls of spaghetti, pizza, and gosh, who knows, even maybe some Bud Light. Hopefully by now you're through the security and turnstile ticket checks and inside the Colosseum. If not, you may want to pause this audio guide. Okay, after passing the ticket turnstiles, tourists are sometimes forced to follow a special route. No worries. Your ultimate goal is to get outside into the open arena. It doesn't matter if this is on the ground floor or up on the second floor. Just follow the crowds and get out into the open air arena. Wherever you end up, upstairs, downstairs, north, south, east, or west, belly up to the railing and listen to my spiel about the Colosseum. Okay, you can tell you are in a sports stadium, just like the one in or near your hometown back home. There is multi-level seating with rows, stairs, and aisles leading to each assigned seat. With some imagination, you can visualize the rings of seating circling the arena area. Notice the buttresses and supports for the tunnels leading up to the second level. Even higher, you can still see the remains of the dual stairs leading up to the cheap seats on level 3. And down below is the oval-shaped playing field. 50 to 80,000 fans could look down, each with a pretty good view of the action. The arena is laid out on an east-west axis, perhaps to take advantage of the sun's trajectory. Speaking of the sun, the Roman engineers devised a set of canvas sails that were drawn over the spectators as the sun made its way across the stadium. The guys in the cheap nosebleed seats never had to sweat it out in the boiling sun. But the important people, the senators, politicians, and even emperors, probably had to battle the sun's rays at some point during the day. Look at the field and the playing surface. It may be difficult to imagine just how the exposed skeleton or foundation you see here was actually used. But look, you're looking at the tunneling and foundations which once supported the floor of the playing field. These skeletal pillars and passageways were once covered with wooden planks on which a foot of sand was spread to make the playing field. By the way, the Latin word arena means sand, thus the origin of our modern term for an oval-shaped stadium. The Colosseum's arena was 280 feet by 164 feet, slightly smaller than our modern football field, but plenty big enough for the Roman games. It's interesting to note that this ratio, 5-3, has been known throughout history as the golden ratio, representing the perfect order of existence in nature. It's the same ratio our modern computers and TV screens use in the 21st century. Find the bronze cross on ground level. It is on the arena's north side, directly on the 50-yard line. The cross was placed there in 2000 by Pope John Paul II, to commemorate the Christian martyrs who were sacrificed in the Roman arena. It is thought to occupy the place where the emperor's box was constructed. Now, we'll use this cross as a reference point several times in this commentary, so keep it in mind here on the 50-yard line on the north side. In Roman times, the games would begin with participants, gladiators, and pageantry entering from the west end. That's 90 degrees counterclockwise from the cross. The procession would continue counterclockwise and pause at the south 50-yard line, a place reserved for the Vestal Virgins. Those were 9 young ladies appointed to attend to the eternal flame of Rome over there in the forum next door. The parade moved on until they got to the emperor's box, where all stopped to pay homage to the boss. The games began with opening acts in the morning, animals against animals. Then they proceeded later to animals against men, women against midgets. Each game ended with at least one participant dead and carted out of the arena. Animals were kept in cages in the passageway underneath the arena's floorboards. You can see about three quarters of those passageways today. One quarter of the arena area down there is covered with a plywood floor, helping us to imagine what it would have looked like in Roman times. All the while, spectators would be watching from the stands. Some brought their own hibachis, cooked chicken wings, and drank wine. No kidding, this is proven in the museum up there on level 2, so go up and have a look if you have time. During the lunchtime for the Romans, the entertainment continued with executions of prisoners, thieves, and enemies of the state. The Romans were innovative in these executions. Some would simply be thrown to the lions and eaten alive. Others would be made to dress up as mythological characters and play out their roles to the death. In the late afternoon, the games would progress to the main event. Professionals, called gladiators, were pitted one against the other. The battles were cruel, gruesome, and bloody. You've seen it in the movies, and that's a pretty good representation of what the main event was here in Rome. The Colosseum was constructed for the enjoyment and entertainment of the citizens of Rome. Admission was always free, and events were often sponsored by politicians. The Colosseum, as mentioned before, opened in 80 AD with a 100-day festival of events in which 2,000 men and 9,000 animals were killed in one sort of competition of the other. Okay, try to make your way up to the second level if you're not already there. Then work your way around to the west side with views of the Roman Forum across the way. Remember, the cross is on the north, so west is 90 degrees counterclockwise from the cross. Pause this audio guide if necessary to get up to this location on level 2. Let's have a quick review of Roman history. The Romans built and ruled the empire roughly from 500 BC to 500 AD, about 1,000 years. The empire grew and expanded for 500 years. It stayed solid and steady for 200 years and was at its peak when the Colosseum was built. Then, around 200 AD, it began a slow decline for 300 years. The first 500 years saw Rome as a republic ruled by elected senators. The republic's economy was built mostly on farming and slave trading. As it expanded, there were many mouths to feed. The last 500 years, Rome was an empire ruled by an emperor called Caesar. The economy then shifted and was funded by conquests of foreign lands and the spoils of war, while supplying slave labor, income, and booty. Hopefully, you're on the western end of the second level. Look away from the indoor arena area to see what's nearby the Colosseum. The big white marble arch is dedicated to Emperor Constantine, who ruled Rome from 280 to 337 AD, and he is known for legalizing Christianity. Leading away from the arch and into the Roman Forum is the Via Sacra, the Sacred Way, once the main street of Rome. It is the stone-covered street with people on it, not vehicles. The Via Sacra heads uphill to the Arch of Titus, which is at the entrance of the Roman Forum. And to the left of the Forum and Arch of Titus rises Palatine Hill, the home to many imperial palaces, lots of excavated ruins, and the pretty pine trees that look like umbrellas, which are really known as umbrella pines. Okay, let's try to wrap all this up. With Constantine and the coming of Christianity, the Colosseum and its deadly games fell out of vogue. Contests and gladiators sporadically occurred here until they were outlawed in 435. As the empire died, so did the Colosseum. It fell into disuse, its foundations, walls, and infrastructure crumbled, and the amphitheater set as a relic to a bygone era. Earlier, I mentioned that in the Middle Ages, it was cannibalized for building materials. Various groups of squatters moved in and contributed to its decay. Wind, rain, fire, and age all played a part in the Colosseum's demise. Then, in 1349, a big earthquake toppled the south side. In the 16th century, several popes dedicated parts of this pagan Colosseum as places for Christian worship. The quake damage from 1349 was repaired, and walls were shorn up with new supporting walls of brick and mortar. This is what you see today over on the south side. If it weren't for those popes and the Christian church, the Colosseum would probably be in crumbles buried beneath a modern street of Rome today. There is only one way out of this sightseeing tour. Find the stairs leading down. Follow the exit, or the uscita sign in Italian, to the ground level. The exit is on the south side, opposite from where you entered. You pop out looking at a wall about 6 feet high, a street filled with traffic beyond, and the Arch of Constantine on your right. The Roman Forum and Palatine Hill are included with your ticket that you have for the Colosseum. So if you are up for it, wander up the Via Sacra, through the Roman Forum, and exit up the hill to the right onto the Imperial Forum Road. Hey guys, thanks for sticking with me. I hope you've enjoyed this audio tour of the Flavian Amphitheater and the Roman Colosseum. Your adventure starts right here with David McGuffin's Exploring Europe.